The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 697. It's the 30th of January, 2017. On the podcast today, I have, by the way, it's a busy one. Are you ready for this? Okay, here we go. Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, talks about today's positive flow test on their PG-10 well. I also have Matt Lofgren, CEO of Nostra Terra, NTOG, answering private investor questions. Plus, Martin Eales, CEO of Rainbow Earth Minerals, that's RBW, on their first day of trading on the London Stock Exchange, explains what the business is all about. Plus, as of Monday, I have Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about Amersur Resources, that's AMER, Pantin Resources, Bolivan, and he also covers Ascent Resources. I also have today suggested one for your watch list is Metal Tiger, MTR, submitted by Sean the Big Cheese. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on our platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources at the AST. Thanks for coming back on, Col.
Hi, Justin. It's great to be back.
And Ascent at the moment is quite appropriate because your share price is just ascending. The last few weeks hasn't been doing very well, hasn't it?
We have, yeah. We're definitely moving in the right direction. Ever since we told people that we'd successfully recompleted the well, I think the share price started to move. And now with the results this morning, hopefully we're seeing a bit more improvement.
Well, we'll go through the result of the PG-10 flow test in a bit. But if there are people listening right now who've never heard of you, Colin, can you explain what the business is all about, please?
Sure, Justin. Ascent Resources, we're an AIM-listed oil and gas exploration and production company, focused European onshore assets. Our main asset is a 75% interest in the Petisovci gas field, which is in northeastern Slovenia, on very close to the border with Croatia and Hungary. Mm-hmm. Company's been involved in the country since 2007. They drilled two wells in 2011, which flowed at commercial rates, but the projects was being delayed for some time while we got a route to market for the gas. Slovenian bureaucracy delayed us being able to construct a treatment plant to put the gas into the national grid. So last year in July, we signed two things that were important. We signed a gas sales agreement, which allowed us to export the gas effectively to Croatia for sale. And we signed a purchase agreement to acquire a small company called Trometa, which owned access rights over this pipeline. Then in November 16, we raised about £4.5 million, which has allowed us to go ahead with the work programmes that we need to get into first gas. And now in the last month, we finished the recompletion of well PG-10, which is our more important well. And we've done a flow test and we announced the results today. And the results were very pleasing because it showed that the well tested at least as good as it did in 2011 when they did a fairly short test. So we've done an extended flow test over the weekend. We've got a lot of data and the well looks very good.
Yeah, well, you're saying that it's exceeded management's expectations and it's reading about. So for people not aware, so you said achieved on a 12 millimeter choke, you got 249,064 cubic meters per day, or 8.8 MMSCFD per day. So, you know, simplify for people not aware of chokes, what significance this has, the bigger size choke, the smaller size choke. So why is this good on a 12 millimeter choke, Colin?
Well, this was good. It's comparable with the flow rates that we got back in 2011, where it was sort of between 8 and 8.5 million on a similar choke size. We ran a series of tests over the weekend, or since Friday, really, on various choke sizes. So we ran it for a few hours on a 5 millimeter choke, and then on a 6 millimeter and an 8 millimeter to see. I'm not technical about it. It shows the technical guys how quickly the pressure builds back up in the reservoir and what the flow rates are like at different choke sizes. Allows them to give me a good estimate of what the sort of stabilized production rates might look like in the future. So the 12 millimeter choke was the biggest one we used, and that gives you a good idea of what the well would flow at when it's running at sort of full through tilt, as you were.
Tilt, yeah, okay. So it's good on all standings. And like I said, the tech guys there now will probably be logging all that and noting and exactly telling you what you're expecting to get over the next months or whatever years. Is that right?
Yeah, so I've got lots of spreadsheets now with all the different data points on pressures and flow rates and temperatures and everything. And that's going to a firm of consultants now. And they've got it already, and they're crunching those numbers, and they'll produce a report which will allow me then to plan production for the next 12 months. Because the next step now for the well is to get it into production. The flow line's already laid across to the CPP, so we need to get it connected into infrastructure and to start to sell some gas.
Yeah, and your comment then, the RS, we're extremely pleased with the results, and I look forward to bringing gas to the market in the near future. So what is the near future, Colin?
The near future, we said before, sort of by the end of this quarter, we'd hope to sell some gas, and that's still what I'm aiming for. So yeah, the flow line's already laid. I think there's a way to start selling gas quite quickly once we can get it connected into the existing CPP.
Marvellous, yeah, it's all going well. I'm looking at a set of lists here. By the way, I love a spreadsheet too, but I'm looking at a set of lists here. And the company most followed in the last 24 hours, Ascent Resources. The company most followed in the last 7 days, Ascent Resources. The company most followed in the last 30 days, Ascent Resources. All-time most followed, you are now at number 3. I think last time we spoke, you were about number 5 or 6. So you're now edging up towards that number 1 spot, Cole. So if you can, for people not following you right now, to help you push you up a bit further, can you give us 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page at Vox, please?
3 reasons to follow Ascent, I guess. I mean, we've got a significant onshore gas asset, which is in a stable EU country, connected infrastructure, including a pipeline which runs into a neighbouring jurisdiction. So we've got everything you could possibly want. We've got the PG10 flow test proves that it's a very commercial well and gives us confidence for the other wells that we wish to recomplete and then bring into production. And I guess within the next few months, the company's going to move from an exploration company to a production company, and we're going to start selling some gas. So things are looking good.
Yeah, so you mentioned the other wells there. How many other wells are there, and what kind of timeline are you looking at for those?
Well, we've PG11A, which is the other one that Ascent drilled. So we'd move on and look at it now, decide exactly when we want to recomplete it. The gas from PG10, we've got a good problem, or a good question to deal with now, and that the gas from PG10 is more than enough than we need
The
ENA contract, so there's no immediate pressure to do PG11. Be curious to see what it flowed at when we got it recompleted and tested. So we'll decide when exactly we time that. There are then a number of other old wells in the field that have produced in the past, and some are producing small volumes at present, and part of the field development plan will be to use those old wells. There's at least 7 of them that the technical guys have identified as being good candidates, and they could be re-entered and recompleted and brought onto production as well. So once we've got the permit, so we can clean the gas and put it in the grid, or once one of these other options that we have with the methanol or whatever comes through, we're able to sell, or we beef up the pipeline to Croatia, once we can take more gas, then we can recomplete more wells and boost production fairly quickly from wells that are already drilled.
Marvellous. But at the moment, PG10 is the well, and like I said, you've got enough gas there to go on with. All right, marvellous, Colin. It's lovely to chat to you, and look forward to chatting to you again. And maybe next time we chat, you'll be number 2 or even number 1 on the most followed. So speak then, fella.
Let's hope. Thanks, Justin. Good to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matt Lofgren, Chief Executive Officer at Nostratella. It's NTOG ticker. Matt, thanks for joining me.
All right, Justin, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know it's particularly late out there because you're in the US, but so thanks very much. Now, we've got a question and answer session. We've sent out a survey. Also, we've gathered some questions from social media to put to you. But first and foremost, Matt, and a quick summary for people not aware of what you do. What does Nostratera do, please?
Well, we're an onshore US and Egypt E&P exploration and production company. So we go out and we drill wells, produce, and sell the oil.
Okay, now we got a lot of questions, so let's whip through them. First and foremost, how much money are we owed from Egypt? Now, of course, you've got an interest in Egypt there, so what's the answer to that, Matt?
Egypt right now, the revenues are approximately £1 million owed to NTOG. However, there's also operating expenses that are being accrued as well.
Okay, all right. Number 2, what's the potential revenue and profit from Pine Mills? What are the all-in sustaining costs per barrel?
Sure. Yeah, well, last week we actually reported our operating info on the field, and we were pretty detailed in that. Revenues are approximately $100,000 a month. Our LOE, or the lease operating expenses, which are the cost to operate the field, those include the overheads, are under $60,000 a month, which are approximately $18 a barrel, to answer the question. So these figures, they'll fluctuate. The LOE expenses are relatively steady. The biggest part of that is going to be the electricity. So, you know, that can change when rates change. But we're open to fluctuating on the commodity prices, which is more important. So when oil prices increase, which we think they're more likely to go up than down, then we're going to benefit from that. So we have a relatively fixed cost, if you will, along with increasing revenues, hopefully. Something I think I think it's important to point out, something that's important to understand for us, is that this is key to what we're doing at Nostra Terra. We know that oil prices are cyclical in nature. We've said that we feel that this is at the bottom or near the bottom of the cycle. So for us, now's the time to be acquiring assets on the cheap. You know, buy low, sell high, as we say. But as part of what we're doing, we're keenly focused on acquiring the assets that are cash flow positive, that are going to add to the cash flow for the company, and still provide further upside through improvements, operations, lower risk development, and even riskier exploration as part of that. But the foundation is being built with the production and the cash flow.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any other acquisitions in your sights?
Yeah, sure. We certainly do. We've got a lot of deal flow within our network. They range from anywhere from early look analysis, doing some early due diligence, offers being sent, negotiations taking place, et cetera. So, we mentioned our primary targets are producing or near producing assets with room to run, we like to call it room to run or room for further growth.
Okay. All right. Next question is, what's your cash burn per month?
The last published accounts that we can share are going to be our 2016, our interim accounts. We keep our overheads relatively low, and our administrative costs for that 6 month period were 222,000 pounds, or roughly 37,000 pounds per month. Made further changes to benefit our shareholders. We've been repositioning on the corporate level and as well as the portfolio. And we've achieved we announced this previously, that we achieved a 42% reduction in our overheads, which included approximately 25% reduction in management and board remuneration.
Marvelous. Okay, next question. Do you need to raise funds?
No, we've mentioned several times we don't have a need to raise funds, and we're focusing on developing Pine Mills using existing resources.
Okay, next question. How much do you get paid? Have you considered taking a pay cut when the share price went south?
Sure. Yeah. Remuneration, again, these are in the annual accounts, and we've got no problem sharing that. Yes, I did take when the oil prices had a significant drop, and they were sustained for a long period. Not just myself, but the whole board, we took a cut, making adjustments for the company. So it was significant. Like I said, it was 25%.
Okay. All right. Next question. Quite a long one. In your recent deal with GFP Texas, you paid $200,000 to acquire an additional 7.5% working interest in the Pine Mills oil field. As part of this deal, you inherited a court judgment where you owed $720,000 in trade receivables from the other part owner, which is Hammerhead Management Partners. This seems like an excellent deal. Why didn't GFP just collect the money themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the assets, first you had the seller Q as well as GFP. So the Q had the 80%, GFP had the 20%. Both companies, for Q, they're both non-core assets for the companies. Q is focusing on Asia, and GFP is focusing in the northern part of the U.S. in Montana. The judgment receivables are associated with the working interest, and it's part of the exercise of the preemption right, and it's just much cleaner to keep it all together.
Yeah. Next question is relating to that, really. Would you prefer to have 100% of Pine Mills be the owner there, or have Hammerhead as part owner, and why?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, if you go back to the receivables totaling approximately $720,000, and that will change because of the interest that continues to accrue. But the key for us is acquiring the working interest. And so the receivable is part of that. And if we end up getting paid instead of the working interest, that's probably more beneficial for us. However, at the same time, we've got 7/8 of the asset. If we had 8/8, 100% working interest, we're happy to do that. Again, we're in acquisition mode and we're seeing the assets on the cheap. So if we can buy more of the asset that we like, that we think has further upside, we're plenty happy doing that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now, next question is about your share purchases. How were you able to top up just before the recent RNS about Pine Mills when you previously you couldn't buy due to being a closed period?
The closed periods are around two different things. Your first is on your financial reporting. There's set timelines around your financial reporting, and the other is when the company's in possession of material information. So any share dealings have to go through the board, the advisors. It's not a simple thing to get done, frankly. At the time that we had the various assets that we were working on in the pipeline, one thing that we always look at, I mean, we always have different, or usually have different offers out, but are we in the process of negotiating any, or have anything that's accepted? Hence, it would be material. And at the time that that the purchases were made, that was not the case.
Okay. All right. Next question. Someone on social media have accused you of loaning stock you hold in Nostra to an organization so it could short the company's shares. Is there any truth in this?
No, absolutely not. It was approximately about 5 years ago. We used, I personally used the stock that I owned in Nostra as collateral for a loan that enabled me to exercise an option that I had. And it was all properly disclosed via RNS. I think one of the issues that came up was that there were two data entry errors on the FCA's register of short positions. That meant that an independent website reported incorrectly and reported as being a short, which wasn't the case. So the FCA recognized it. They that there was a mistake. They corrected the database. And it doesn't show as that being the case. So any accusations that I lent stock to shorters is just simply false.
Okay. What was the barrels of oil produced per day per well at Pine Mills before the workover and then after the workover?
We don't break it down on a per well basis. It's frankly irrelevant because you've got different wells, some that are ejection wells and some that are producing wells, and as well as SWD or disposal wells. So it's a system that works together, hence the oil field. But the production, the initial workover wasn't targeting a change in production. It was targeting an abandoned well. And what we had done was a re-entry into the existing well bore. We reported that last week, the re-entry was successful. We were able to retrieve the equipment that was within the well. We cleaned it up, and now we've got what was previously abandoned well to being a well that's clean and something that we could use in the future. And that's something that we'll be working on here shortly.
Okay. Next question is, Pine Mills sounds similar to Chisholm Trail that never made private investors money. What's different at Pine Mills?
I should correct on that. That's not accurate. Actually, Chisholm Trail did provide a profit to us. We acquired the asset for several reasons. One of them was that the stack pay nature that we found in the area, and every well we drilled was successful, provided good revenues. And subsequently, when we ended up selling the asset, we sold it at a profit. Even though oil prices were pretty low. But we're refocusing the company. We felt it was a good opportunity to sell the asset. It was a whole bunch of minority interest in an area where we didn't operate. So it allowed us, by selling, to pay down the debt. We could use the cash as well as to acquire other assets, namely Pine Mills, where we're the majority working interest and that we operate. So something where we sold less production and acquired more production, sold at a higher price and acquired at a lower price, went from minority interest to majority interest, went from a non-op to an operating. So all of these were positive moves for us. It was a good time to sell, and it was at a profit.
Yeah, yeah. Next question is, how many employees are there on the Prospect, maintaining and operating, and how much is all that costing?
I assume when you say Prospect, we're probably referring to Pine Mills.
Yeah.
On Pine Mills, after the changes that we made, there were other employees when we acquired the asset, but we'd made some operational changes initially. And after the operational changes, we have three new employees or three new people that we had hired or brought on. Their overheads and their overheads that we pay for these people are part of the LOE or the operating expenses that we disclosed in the previous RNS as well. So that's all included in that figure. We also have other consultants that we use, whether it's related to the asset or other assets. And these are people that we use when we need. So it helps us keep our overheads low, and it also helps us scale up when we need to.
Okay. Pine Mills reserves have been calculated and reported internally. Are we going to see an independent, competent person's report?
Yes. Yeah. We said that we'll be doing that. The reason we did an internal report first was we just simply don't need to waste the money. We're pretty tight on those types of things. So we did it internally, off of the same calculation, the same methodology that the external will use. But the independent will do twice a year. Initially the main one will end up being in the first half of the year, and it goes to our bank facility.
Okay, and the last one, Matt, has due diligence been done at Pine Mills?
Sure, yeah, of course. I mean, we moved pretty quickly. We mobilized real quickly on it. It was an asset that we actually had known for several years, so that helped out. We know the area, we've known the exact asset. But we also have, like I said, we have our consultants lined up to help us so we can mobilize and move quickly. And when we bought it, when we first were able to put it under contract, we moved our landmen out and had work done within days. So they had done the title, the legal within days. We had done the rest of due diligence, some of it prior to and some of it in that period initially. So we were able to move quickly, like I said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, listen, Matt, thank you for doing the question. I know it's gone midnight over there. And as always in the podcast, what I like to do is I do highlight the top five most followed companies. And so I'd like to give you an opportunity here for anyone not following Nocetera to give us three reasons, Matt, why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we're working on here that are exciting, but one thing that I think is important to bring to mind, I mentioned earlier that we're buying assets at what we believe is the bottom of the market that are already cash flowing and are adding to the company. Now, some of these we will take risks from time to time, but most of these are lower risk, and so they're adding to right now. That's something to keep in mind where a lot of companies are going and having the exploration, going for a bigger success, high risk, high reward. We feel that what we're doing is lower risk, but it's not low reward. It actually adds immediately to what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, listen, thanks for coming on, and look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future.
All right, Justin, appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Eales, Chief Executive Officer of Rainbow Rare Earths. That's RBW ticker. Martin, thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
Now, people searching for that today, that ticker probably won't find you, because this is IPO Friday, and we're going to be probably doing a regular thing here where we talk to companies that are IPOing in the next few days, and you hope to IPO on Monday, is that correct?
Yes, we'll be trading on the London Stock Exchange on Monday morning, Justin.
And is that the full market or AIM, or where's that?
We're going to the official list of the London Stock Exchange.
Okay, the full list. Okay, and so first and foremost, Martin, what does the company do? Give us a brief summary as to what Rainbow Rare Earths are all about, please.
Okay, sure. We're a junior mining company with a project in Burundi, in East Africa. We're going to restart a rare earths mine that was previously mined in the 50s, 60s and 70s, so 78. We started our exploration and research in 2011. We've got a full mining license, and having raised the money from the IPO, we're ready to start production.
Excellent. So you're set to go. You're hitting the ground running there. So how much are you raising, and what will be the size of the company market cap wise, approximately?
We've raised $8 million in the IPO. On admission, the market cap of the entire company will be 152 million shares at 10p, so £15 million market cap.
Okay, and like I said, it's close to production there, so tell me exactly what you're going to be using the money for, please, Martin.
So it's a raise to start the mine. So in our use of proceeds, we have a capital expenditure budget, CapEx, of approximately $2.3 million or just under £2 million. We need some working capital until the end of the year when our anticipated first sales come in. We have a bit of refinancing to take a convertible debt off our balance sheet and a few creditors to pay. But it's an incredible project in terms of a low CapEx, low operating cost.
Yes, and that's important. First of all, I know very little about rare earths. I know they're quite in vogue at the moment, and they have been. Can you tell us a bit about the market? How are prices? You know, is it buoyant? Are you able to sell what you produce straight away? What's the deal there?
Well, lots of questions there, Justin. But let me start with rare earths themselves. I'm sure they came to most of the listeners' attention in 2011 when there was a big price spike that was caused by the Chinese restricting the export of rare earths. Now, China produces about 90% of rare earth production in the world. There is an idea of concern of consumers outside of China about resource security. And that's where our mine, being one of only two non-Chinese rare earth mines, is a competitive advantage if there were any problems with Chinese exports again. The uses of rare earths themselves, there's a whole host of industrial uses, but the biggest value driver is really rare earth magnets. That's about 70% of the value chain of rare earths. Any electric motor, if you think about it, uses magnets. Rare earth magnets are the most powerful. They're used in hard disk drives, in speakers, in wind turbines, and also a forecast big chunk of the market going forward is electric vehicles. We all know the forecasts are that electric vehicles are going to be a big part of the car market in the near future.
Yeah. So how much do you intend to produce here? And you know, will you be selling that? And what's the life of the mine? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we are going to be producing and selling a rare earth concentrate. So we're not going downstream to separate into the individual rare earth oxides themselves. We're selling a concentrate. Our short-term production target in the next couple of years is to get to 5,000 tons of rare earth concentrate a year. We are going to be selling that through our distribution agreement with the German blue chip company ThyssenKrupp, who are effectively selling all our material for us around the world.
Oh, excellent. So already you have a customer there waiting. And so what, if I'm doing the maths here as an investor, what price per ton are you getting, for the rare earths? And, what is your margin there?
Well, we can't go into too much detail about that at the moment, Justin. The rules prevent me from putting forecasts out. But the interesting way to think about it is our basket price of our rare earth constituents is about $10,000 a ton. Yeah. We take a discount to that, obviously, because we're selling a concentrate and the buyer is effectively separating it into oxides. But, in our presentation and our prospectus, we talk about the competent person suggesting we will have operating costs in the first year of $810 a ton. We have transportation shipping costs of $240 a ton. And I think in our targets for 5,000 tons a year of near-term production, we're comfortable with those numbers that it's a profitable operation.
Marvellous. I you do seem quietly confident there. I quite like that. Okay, so how did you come, Martin, to be a CEO of Rainbow Rare Earths here? Where have you come from? And
I've been around in the city for a while. I'm a former investment banker and broker. I specialised in the mining industry at Royal Bank of Canada, advising listed companies. And I joined Rainbow in 2014. I knew the chairman of the company very well. From my days in the industry, Adonis Paroulis, and I've been working on solidly on this project since the second half of 2014.
Yeah, so always handy to have that connection with city and finance. So where you're based in Burundi, the mine there, what's it like there, politically? Is it fine there?
We've had nothing but support from the Burundian people and the government. We negotiated a fully ratified mining license, which was granted in 2015. Having been there since 2011, we've got great relationships at all levels of government with the mining ministry and crucially with the local people in the area where the mine is. There's strong support for the project. We don't have opposition, no NGOs or local people. They really want us to start mining. So, you know, as a place to operate, we found it very easy. And indeed, my major shareholder, the Pella Resources Group, operates all over Africa. And indeed, you know, Burundi is one of the easier places to operate that they've found.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, you were saying initially, hopefully, to get up to 5,000 tonnes per annum there. And is there a chance to extend and improve the resource asset there?
Well, this is the amazing thing, because the volume is so low that we're looking to mine, the capex we're spending now on the processing plant actually has capacity without further investment to take us up to 10,000 tonnes a year. So should there be demand, should we be able to mine the tonnes, there's no further capex, but it can support a much bigger project.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, every day on the podcast, Martin, what I do is I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets platform there. And people follow a company by obviously hitting the follow button, and it goes on their watch list, and they get RNSs straight to the front screen of their phone, smartphones, whenever you release one. So what I'd like to do now is ask you, for when you are listed on Monday, give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please.
I'd love to. So this is a low capex, low cost mining project. It has near-term news flow in terms of we're going to be starting production, starting processing, and hopefully have first sales Q4 this year. There aren't many junior mining companies that can come to market and say that. And then I think the nature of the product we're going to be selling, rare earths are exciting. Everybody can visualize the idea of rare earths going into their smartphone and into their car. It's a market that's growing, and there is excitement, an uptick in the price. There are forecasts out there saying that you know, that China may well be a net importer of rare earths over the next few years. We are well placed as a producer that's located outside of China.
Excellent. So it's quite an exciting time for you, Martin, 2017, by the looks of it. And listen, I look forward to chatting to you some more when you're actually listed and you have some more news out. Thanks very much for chatting to me.
Thank you, Justin. Great to speak to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority writer, podcaster, it's Malky. Morning, Malky. You all right?
Good morning, Justin. Yeah, this is a fiddle this morning.
Cool. All right. It's good to hear. It's always nice to hear someone perky and ready and up for it on a Monday morning. And that's the good thing about having a job you enjoy, I think, you know, is that I used to be in jobs I didn't enjoy. And Sunday evening, I think, oh, no, work tomorrow. But now I really enjoy what I'm doing. And I look forward to the markets opening, you know, on a Monday morning.
Me too. I'm well up for it, mate. I'm well up for it.
Cool. Okay. So what are we looking at? What stocks are you looking at, Malky?
Well, we're going to look at three or four stocks briefly this morning for various different reasons. I'm going to have a look at Amerisur, who've made a couple of announcements recently. I'm going to talk about Pantheon, Boliven, and very quickly on Ascent Resources.
Okay, go for it. Let's go for it.
Okay, so Amerisur, I think, has been rather left behind a bit in the market recently. Last week they announced that Platanillo 24 was coming on stream at 420 barrels a day, which is very good, very profitable barrels for them. They've made a couple of other announcements recently where the infill well and one or two things are beginning to pick up. And I'm expecting plenty more from a varied and quite substantial drilling campaign throughout the year. So at 25.5p, I think they're a bit too cheap. The OBA pipeline to Ecuador is taking over 3,000 barrels a day, 3,100 barrels a day now, and I expect that to rise. You know, the ABA pipeline took a long time to get together, and for some people 3,000 barrels a day isn't as much as they expected, but over the next few months, every time that Amerisur bring on something in that area, they will add it through the pipeline. You know, and every barrel saves them $12 a barrel, so it's very profitable. And at 25-odd P, this stock is way too cheap. So just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. Chart is getting quite good. You know, it's recovered from the earlier year falls, but it's trading in a range now. So, you know, it's almost like you can draw a line there, a gradient line sloping upwards. And it's now hitting the bottom of that line, so you'd think almost buy zone, you know? If it drops below that, then it may go lower, but it should hold there at the moment at 25 pence, yeah.
It almost always does hold that lower level, and fundamentally it's in good nick, so it's just been left behind a bit by the market.
Yeah, what's next, Malky?
Pantheon is next, a huge market in this one, where some people love it and some people hate it. It's a real Marmite stock. But last week they announced that the VOBM 2H, this is the sidetrack well, had actually got to TD and discovered hydrocarbons, which was great news, which they're now testing. They called it a potentially significant reservoir. I spoke in the Eagleford sandstone, this is. I spoke to the company, and you know, they never give anything away, these guys, but they sounded quite confident to me. And of course, the other well, which was looking for the Eagleford, but on its way down, found the Wilcox. Yeah, I just don't think the market has correctly worked out quite how positive this could be. If the Wilcox is a discovery in its own right, it's good for two reasons. First of all, at the shallower level, it produces gas, which will be, you know, in the market pretty quickly, and it's sweet gas as well, so it mixes, it looks very, very positive indeed. And you know, not very far away, a few miles away, there are very profitable Wilcox discoveries, and they pay back in about a month or two of drilling, so that's very good. And of course, the once this is complete, that we're on the way to go back into the search for the Eagleford underneath the Wilcox, and I'm pretty positive about that too. I'm sure that they'll have a better attempt at that one. So, one thing and another. I know there are sort of lots of views either way on Pantheon at the moment, and they've probably done themselves no great services in the way that they present their news in the last few months. I'm very confident that Jay and his team are doing very well indeed, and I'm quite pleased that the share price isn't racing away one way or the other, because that's what caused the problem in the first place. So, yeah. You know, I'm sticking with Pantheon absolutely solid with these two recent announcements, and probably a couple more announcements yet to come.
Yeah, okay, that's PANR, Pantheon, and what's next, Alki?
Boleven is the other one I'm going to talk about briefly, because you know, there's been investor discontent here, Justin. There's been a company building up a stake and sending letters to the company saying they wanted to effectively take the cash out. The great thing about Boleven is it's got a huge lump of cash, you know, the equivalent of the market price, effectively nearly $100 million. But, you know, I think that the management of Boleven, albeit fairly quiet, are misunderstood by the marketplace. I would tell you that a Tindi prospect in Cameroon, which is their major project, which they've had this huge farm in, is, I think, it's an absolute cracker of a project. And as and when their partners get together and drill it, and they get together with the government and work out, you know, how they're going to process and get rid of the gas, it's going to be massively valuable to the company. So first of all, you have to look at what they're going to do with the gas, and they've had many, many different ways of doing it. I think that the most recent technical way of doing it might well be to take it through to the Marathon plant in Equatorial Guinea. They did mention that last week. And there are plenty of other ways, but I think that might be the best way of doing it. You know, Kevin does get a lot of stick for, you know, for what he's done. It's gone very quiet. I had it in the bucket list last year, and I would rather have hoped that something might have happened on a Tindi this year, last year. I don't think I'm going to lose faith with it now. You know, if you'd asked an oil chief exec 2 years ago to farm out an important part of their portfolio and receive the best part of $250 million in cash and carry, you'd have said that was a very, very achievable, a serious achievement. And I don't think that they'll even get quite the benefit of the doubt for it. I would dispatch the bloke who's trying to take the cash out of the company, give them the benefit of the doubt, but make sure the management know that that wherever they can, they get things done. So I think Boleven is still significantly undervalued.
Okay, marvellous. So it's BLVN. And you're going to quickly mention Ascent Resources. Just had Colin on the podcast there, and he seems quite upbeat, and the share price is doing well recently. What do you reckon?
Very briefly, I think this is interesting. This has really come onto my radar screen, and I'm looking forward to catching up with the company. I think the flow rates they've announced today, 8.8 million scf's, is very good, and it's a really interesting step forward for the an offtake agreement, which they could get on with straight away. I think Colin and the team are doing pretty well. It's very much on the radar screen, and I'm even looking at it as a potential to go into the bucket list. It could be quite interesting, this one. So I'm watching it very carefully.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? For the last few weeks now, it's been gaining traction on Vox. Lots of people following it. And I read out, we have four lists here, the most followed companies, like the last 7 days, last month, and also in three of the four metrics, basically. They are the most followed company, so they could be highly followed, getting a lot of traction, and there's a lot of people on social media like them. So, and Colin's a lovely fella to boot as well. So, you know, good luck to them and all their holders there. Malky, thanks for that. Speak next week, fella.
Yeah, thanks very much, Justin. Bye now.
All right, time for today's suggested one for your watch list. Don't forget, anything you hear is just information. It is not intended in any way as investment advice. Please do your own research. Sean, thank you for submitting this. And by all means, if you know of a company that should be on other people's watch lists, or you think it should be, then submit it here for this feature and it'll get the air of publicity. All right, what does the company do? AIM-listed investing company, primarily focused on undervalued natural resource companies. Metal Tiger provides financial and business support to companies to maximize the value of their natural resources interests, and through this we aim to deliver significant returns for Metal Tiger shareholders. And Metal Tiger's interest in Botswana currently centers on a high-grade copper and silver target, three, that's T3, deposit, for which a maiden JORC compliant mineral resource estimate was established in September 2016, and an open pit scoping study announced for the 6th of December 2016. Work to build on the T3 scoping study and progress to feasibility study will commence early 2017. At the same time, drilling will test the potential for westerly mineralization extensions over a 3-kilometer strike. How many shares does the company have in issue? 774 million shares. What's current price and market cap? It's 1.75 pence. Market cap, 13.5 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? No revenue as exploration investment company. In the interims, for the 6 months ended the 30th of June, they made 550,000 profit before tax. How much cash or debt does the company have? In their interims, again for 30th of June, they had £808,000 cash in bank, no debt, at least £1.5 million raised from recent placing and sale of Con Business. Money raised in warrants and issues of equity since the results have been around £310,000 in warrant exercises, and they raised £1.5 million gross via placing in December. Okay, list three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, Metal Tiger's interest in Botswana has progressed rapidly with a robust scoping study for T3 copper silver target, giving NPV of circa $297 million, with the copper price around about $3 per pound. Number two, asset division currently holds a basket of shares worth around £4 million and also warrants too. And number three, impending IPO of Thailand Mine, creating value for MTR shareholders through dividend of shares in the new company this year. So that's MTR, Metal Tiger, and do your own research. But thank you, Sean, for submitting that. Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, 88 Energy, that's ADD. At 4, Asia Met Resources, ARS. At 3, URU Metals, that's URU. At 2, Talao Energy, TLO, U. And at number 1, God, they're all over the podcast today. It's Ascent Resources, AST. I had Colin on earlier on, of course, talking about the PG-10 well. Here we go. Top five most liked RNSs on the platform on Vox Markets this morning. A joint fifth position, Hydrodeck, pre-close trading update. Also there at 5, Zenith Energy. Zenith further reduces debt. At 4, Vast Resources, non-convertible debt facility and disposal of non-controlling interest in Pickstone Peerless Gold Mine and Giant Gold Mine to raise $8 million. At 3, Vast Resources, appointment of nominated advisor. At 2, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, significant mineral resources at KB in Georgia. And number 1, there again, Ascent Resources, result of PG-10 flow test. It's the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.